Today we have two special guests, Per Miyake and Sean Wong. They belong to the group of Asian Americans who have decided to dedicate their lives to educating people about what it means to be Asian Americans. Per Miyake, Japanese American writer from Los Angeles, and Sean Wong, Chinese American writer and professor at the University of Washington in Seattle, have been kind enough to answer a few questions for us about their lives, identities, experiences, and work as educators and artists. The interview was conducted by Frank Erner. But first, let's hear extracts of Per Miyake's 21st Century Manzanar and Sean Wong's home base.
When David Takeda walked through the gates of Manzanar, under the barbed wire, past the guard towers with mounted automatic weapons pointed down and directly at him, into the enclosed compound, and saw the tar paper barracks, the dirt and dust whipping across the dry, barren yard, the city of Asian faces herded together under the American flag, he freaked. It had only been 2 days since he had put his sister Kate and her kids on a train in the same Gardena lumber yard his grandparents and his parents had departed from over half a century ago to take them to first the horse stalls at Santa Anita Racetrack, then the American concentration camps at Rober, Chula Lake, Manzanar. His folks and other niseis just called it camp. We met in camp, they'd say. We were in camp together. Our families lived next to each other in camp, they'd say. Kids all thought they were talking about summer camp until they got to college and found out their parents' camp fit Webster's definition of a concentration camp. Reback was no surprise. Executive Order 9066 revisited. World War III became the economic war with Japan. If the economy went down the toilet, the terrorists would have won. If World War II was the battle to save Western civilization from the Nazi Party and the Japanese race, World War III, the economic war, became the ultimate battle to save the very soul of America, its pocketbook. And like September 11, this enemy was immediately identifiable. The same economic foe, the same arch enemy of the United States since December 7, 1941, Japan. Reactions became sanctions and eventually became a total ban of all Japanese products, which only made things worse. Unemployment rose above 30%. The president needed a dramatic revelation to push the concept of World War III, the economic war, into the hyperspace of public support. Like FDR, he needed his Pearl Harbor. It came in the form of a two-pronged rumor. One, that the AIDS virus had originally been developed by Japanese scientists during World War II atrocity experiments conducted on captured civilians and Allied prisoners of war. This accusation, although contrary to the conspiracy theories linking AIDS as a man-made tool of the Reagan-Bush right-wing anti-sex era, became a staple of the internet, TV tabloid shows, radio talk shows, and the other popular vehicles responsible for the mass dissemination of information. It divided liberals better than the OJ trial.
Now I knew that my grandfather's land was an island. He was born in San Francisco, but his father, my great-grandfather, sent him back to China for safety. It was 1917 when he came back. And in 1917, grandfather's island was called Angel Island. My grandfather's land sits in the middle of San Francisco Bay, directly in the path of the fog that flows in from the Golden Gate. The fog meets Angel Island and moves around it to hold it and silence it. When the fog lifts and retreats to the sea, it will often leave a halo around the peaks of Angel Island. Once inside, you will see that the room is lit with bare bulbs hung from the ceiling. You will see that the room is filled with men, women and children. There are two lines, men and younger boys in one, and women and a few young children in the other. An officer stands between the two lines. Behind a large counter, there is an officer for each line. There is some shuffling, but no talking, except for the two officers behind the counter. You will see that we are dressed in drab jackets. Some men are wearing long coats with black pants underneath. Others are wearing regular work clothes, and many are wearing flat-brimmed black hats. You will know why you are standing in line with me. I and my grandfather come back to America after having been raised in China. My father is dead, so I have to assume someone else's name and family in order to legally enter the country. All this information about my new family has been memorized. All my sons, after me, will have my assumed name.
Now let's see what Shan Wong and Perry Miyake have to say.
Why did you write the 21st Century Manzanar?
That was supposed to be my next play, and I started writing it in 1992. The scope of the play got too big. There were too many scenes that could not be contained on stage, too many driving scenes, and my cousin David, who is 6 months older than me, died, and I decided that was the time I should start take a shot at writing a novel. I had sort of been putting it off. I kind of knew in college that I'd be around 40 before I'd be old enough or have enough life experiences to attempt a novel. So that's when I decided to make my next play into this novel.
Why did you write Homebase? Where do you get your information from?
My inspiration was in the 80s, there were the redress and reparations hearings for the bill that was eventually signed by President Reagan to award $20,000 and an apology to everyone that was interned during World War II. And the hearings were held all over the country, and different people testified to the hardship they went through, to the sacrifices they made. And all during this time, there were just demonstrators and people who would disrupt the hearings. And when I saw that, there were people who were still living in World War II. It was like Pearl Harbor happened yesterday, and they still hadn't forgiven anyone vaguely Japanese of anything that the Empire of Japan, any crimes they committed, and they still could not distinguish. And that was the main thing. They could not distinguish between foreign Japanese and Americans of Japanese ancestry. So all of the everything that happened to Japanese Americans during World War II, including serving in the U.S. Armed Forces in Europe and in the Pacific, were it didn't seem to matter to these people. You know, their hatred was just stunning in its sweep and depth and long, the way it was just so long-lasting.
Where do you write? Do you have a favorite place?
I write in my living room. I have two computers, one in a spare bedroom, one in the living room. And the one in the bedroom is hooked up to the internet, and I don't want to get hacked, so I do all my writing in the living room. I'm surrounded by books and a stereo and a TV that I try not to turn on while I'm writing. And that's where I write, usually late at night.
Where did you get information necessary to write the book?
The information for the book I took mostly from, I've been studying it since college, basically, the whole internment. But I also had my own family's history to rely on, and that's basically what I used, because there were so many characters in this book that I did not want to get them mixed up. So I just based some characters on real-life people, and I used my mom and dad's family's histories for, where they were interned, their whole going from, my dad graduated Venice High School in 1941, and he wasn't around for his high school graduation. In his yearbook, there are pictures of every Japanese-American kid in the classes, and underneath, in parentheses, is evacuated in April, and he was sitting in a horse stall at Santa Anita Park, a racing track, ironically, and his whole family was housed there until they got on trains for Arizona. They went to, I think it was Poston in Arizona, and then eventually ended up in Arkansas at the Rohrer camp. And my mom's family, there was a train yard in Gardena that they assembled at and went to Santa Anita, then to Gila, and they ended up in Tule Lake in Northern California, on the inland, on the Northern California-Oregon border. And from there, they ended up in New Jersey. And my dad's family ended up in Michigan for the duration of the war.
Did your attitude towards the topic of your own book change during the writing process?
My attitude towards the book changed greatly, because my first draft, or my final draft, was due just before 9/11. I remember mailing it. Yeah, mailing my final draft on the Friday before 9/11, and then when 9/11 happened, everything changed. I, you know, called my editor, said, you know, everything's changed. What are we going to do? And basically, the premise of my book was that it was as it's the economic factor that's important in the book, that when the U.S. economy collapses, there will be a scapegoat. And since Japan has such a big chunk of the U.S. economy, eliminating Japan as a competitor would be the biggest boost to the American economy in some people's minds, at least the ones who would profit by that. And given people's still there's an inability of people to distinguish between Japanese Americans and foreign Japanese, that it would eventually affect Japanese Americans. So that the basic premise stayed the same.
What's your relationship to the editor? Did the people who proofread your books influence you or the final version?
Fortunately, I had a great relationship with my editor. Her name's Nina Weiner, and she's now with Taschen Books. And she just when I was trying to get the book published, you know, there were several others interested, and they'd always send back their notes, and I'd make the changes. See, originally the book was 1,000 pages, single space, so it was huge, and my editing job was just making it shorter, and that's what she did. She said, "Keep this; it's important. You know, lose that; it's peripheral, and make it shorter." You know, just there were things I was saying several times when I could have said it once. The proofreader, on the other hand, was horrible. There is a you send the manuscript to them, and they send it back with all their corrections made in different colors. So I got it back, and this thing was the manuscript was just bleeding different colors. Every page had some kind of correction on it, and she was really, I felt, overstepping her bounds as a proofreader. She was trying to change the style of the book, and fortunately my editor, and I'm not sure if this is the same with other writers, but my editor said, if you disagree with something, just cross out her changes. And that's what I did. I crossed out just about every one of her changes, except for some not grammatical, but punctuation. I think that was the only thing that was left after I got through negating all of her changes. So this manuscript came back just a complete mess, and basically it was what I originally had.
What are your own experiences with racism?
Definitely not as severe as my grandparents and parents, that's for sure. Plus, I was fortunate to grow up in the Venice area of Los Angeles. Very, very multiracial. Where my grandmother remembers having kids throw rocks at her while she was trying to walk to the grocery store. My experiences were minor tussles that were with racial slurs thrown in, and those really weren't a lot, just because in Venice there are I don't think there are any majorities. There are, you know, the whites and Latinos are the biggest majority, and that's not even over 50%, I don't think. And then you've got every race and color here. Even when I was growing up, it was very, very multiracial. And things didn't, I don't think till gangs came in that they really became racially polarized as they are now.
Was your family concerned by Japanese-American internment?
The internment during World War II affected every member of my family. My dad's father was taken in by the FBI. I don't know if it was that day, December 7th, the afternoon of December 7th, or the next day. And then they didn't see him for almost a year, and he rejoined them at in Arkansas. Two of my uncles on my dad's side were already in the U.S. Army, and I think they were separated from their unit when it happened. And I think were allowed to rejoin. You know, I don't know if they ended up in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, and but that was for a couple of years later. So I don't know what they were doing in the meantime. But they were still in the U.S. Army. My my grandfather, my mom's dad, she distinctly remembers on December 7th. She remembers the FBI coming to their farm, and he talked the FBI out of taking him in. I mean, they were taking every other Issei man in around the area, but they're all farmers, and the ones they were taking in were, if they were community leaders, they were like, church elders and newspaper editors or something like that. So he was the youngest Issei around, so he talked them into letting him stay there to help the other Japanese American families get ready to be interned. And the passage in the book, my mom distinctly remembers my grandfather tying together all of their suitcases, because her whole family's young, very young. I think my uncle was maybe 13 or 14 at the time, and tying all their suitcases together and dragging them across the yard. And he dragged all their suitcases across to the train, and my grandmother on my mom's side was 7 months pregnant with my aunt. She couldn't help, and she did give birth to my aunt. I don't know if it was at Santa Anita or in Gila in Arizona, but it was definitely in camp.
And do you believe this could actually happen again?
Now I do. When I started writing the book, it was in 92, and President Clinton was in office, and I thought civil rights were going to be safe for a while, but with Bush, man, nobody's safe. It's like whoever wants to be, if things get bad, they'll just have another terrorist incident, and who knows where the fallout's going to hit.
What is it like to be Asian American today? Are there still many problems?
Always the problems are the same that affect everybody: employment and job security, health care. And that's shaky for everybody. It's like whoever's got a good job with a good pension, good health plan, they're pretty safe, but who knows who's safe these days. So Japanese Americans aren't much different from everybody else.
Do you feel like a typical Japanese American?
I am definitely not a typical Japanese American. Let's see. All of my friends and my cousins who are my age, they're all married with kids who are in high school or college, and they have careers, They have jobs that have been at for a while and have built a good, they've actually planned things. And I'm a writer, I have another friend who's a photographer, and that we're definitely not typical of all of our other friends or family. And their kids are all involved in sports. If you want to check out what the Japanese American community is doing now, there are a lot of sporting leagues, and I think they started in camp. So I know baseball was really big in camp, and they started their own athletic leagues, and I think they go on today. And also, I married outside my race, which is getting to be more typical, especially with Japanese Americans. What is not typical is that I am a Japanese American man married to a white woman, and the ratio is about the opposite. It's about 3-1, where it's usually a Japanese American woman married to a white man, and primarily white. I think the Hispanic and Black and other Asians are a smaller minority about marriages.
Do you feel like a typical Chinese American? And how did people react to your book? Do white Americans read your book?
Most of the positive reaction I've gotten when I've done readings and stuff is from white people. Yeah, it probably wasn't true in the earlier stages, because I remember having a friend of mine read it, and he's a white man, and he just said, "Man, you really hate white people, don't you?" And what I was trying to do when I was writing it was to deliberately not take the white man's point of view. Because if you notice in movies, and especially TV, it's always everyone's story is there is a white man male character to represent the taking the mainstream point of view or telling the story, something the audience can identify with. Even award-winning Asian-American writers are asked to put a white male character in the lead so that to lead the audience through this story, as though people just couldn't watch this story and see what it is. So my writing, and especially for theater, is I'm going to write from a Japanese-American man's point of view. The main reaction I got from people reading the book was, well, first, it is very intense, and lots of passages of violence in it. And people familiar with my work before that were very surprised because I've done a lot of comedies. Most of my plays are comedies. And I mean, there is humor in the book, but there probably isn't as much intensity in my plays. And also that picture, the photo of me in the back, on the back of the book, I deliberately did not smile. I asked the guy taking the picture, I kept smiling. I said, no, don't. I don't want to smile. I want my serious writer picture here. And so I guess people saw that, and if they had never met me, like some people came up and didn't know it was me, because I'm generally cheerful person.
Well, are you planning on writing a new book? Do you have any new projects, and which ones?
My plans for my next book, which could happen years from now, because I generally have a long gestation period for everything I write, was the plans were for a prequel to 21st Century Manzanar, involving a lot of the characters in this book who are based on people I knew, and mostly when I was working at a record store in the 90s, there were a lot of the people there that I put in the book. And I'll get to that someday, I hope. And my new projects, I had a play that was in rehearsal about a year ago, and one of my actors got sick, and unfortunately he passed away right after that. And this was, I don't know if you know who Mako is. Mako was the founding artistic director of East West Players, which is the oldest Asian American theater in the U.S., and we were in rehearsals in. And he was diagnosed with esophageal cancer, and it was in a late stage, and he died 3 months after the play was canceled. And I'm still trying to get that play back up somewhere, and I've also written another play, and both of those are comedies, so we'll see what happens.